knew from the very beginning, of course, that we had to have a good IT infrastructure if we were going to even do business at all, because of the fact that we were so virtual. We had to have all these partners talking to each other. We couldn't staff up to do it manually, and it just made sense to do it electronically with systems. So we picked products that we knew we could support with minimal manpower and that could scale as large as we needed to go. Microsoft platform on Intel hardware. We picked SAP eventually for our total integration system. We do everything through there, basically. We knew that we just simply had to be that way or we would not succeed.
That's George Schreisner, Director of Enterprise Systems at Endo Pharmaceuticals, talking about the systems and infrastructure decisions the company made in its early days that have helped it manage nearly exponential growth. And that kind of growth and how to handle it is the topic of this SAP Custom Podcast. Hi, and welcome to Blueprint to a Billion, 7 Essentials to Achieve Exponential Growth, a custom podcast sponsored by SAP. I'm Paul Gillen. I'll be your moderator today. In a few minutes, we'll hear from two speakers who will talk about how to become and remain a high-growth company. The goal is compounding revenue growth. It truly distinguishes an exceptional growth business from any other. It's what many business leaders dream of. It's about growing at a nearly constant growth rate, like 50 to 100% per year. Compounding or exponential growth is the common success pattern of America's highest growth companies. Companies you've heard of, such as Starbucks and Google, often double the size of their business every year or two. There are also exponentially growing companies you may not have heard of, such as Tractor Supply, the number one retailer of rural America, and Performance Foods, the supplier to Cracker Barrel and Outback Steakhouse. It's a fact that of America's 7,500 IPOs since 1980, only 5% have achieved $1 billion in revenue. These 5%, which our speaker David Thompson calls blueprint companies, account for half of the employment and two-thirds of the market value created by all those IPO companies. Revenue growth defines a growth company, and these companies had compounding or exponential revenue growth. They grew at consistent rates of 20 to 300%. Very few companies make it into this elite club, though, and even fewer manage to sustain that exponential growth for very long. What's the winning success pattern of America's highest growth companies? Well, they leverage 7 unique management practices, the 7 essentials to achieve exponential growth. Exponential growth places huge demands on people and systems. In writing his book, Blueprint to a Billion, 7 Essentials to Achieve Exponential Growth, our guest speaker has identified that companies invested in IT infrastructure, systems, and services in order to enable consistent growth. These included supply chain, customer, and finance systems. David Thompson also identified that over 30% of blueprint companies have employed SAP to enable continued exponential growth. In this podcast, we'll analyze the characteristics of these companies and tell you what works. As I noted, our guests are David G. Thompson, author of the book Blueprint to a Billion, and he'll describe the 7 essentials. They're not necessarily what you expect. Also joining us is George Schreisner, Director of Enterprise Systems at Endo Pharmaceuticals. Endo is a company that has all the signs of growing exponentially. It's on track to book over $1 billion in revenue this year, and that's a fourfold increase from 2001. Endo has managed its growth sensibly by instituting systems and processes to track and manage its operational data. George will talk about the decisions that Endo made at critical points in its history to continue its success. So let's hear about David's essentials and how they applied to Endo's experience. Well, David, you've identified 7 essentials of high-growth companies. So let's go down the list now and talk about your observations, and then let's see how they apply to Endo as we talk to George. Your first one, David, is create and sustain a breakthrough value proposition. What do you mean by breakthrough in that case?
Yeah, breakthrough in really simple English is just so way better value to the customer that you're just head and shoulders above any other alternative they could select from. And when I think about value proposition, I think about benefits. So it's not about the features, but it's about the benefits that customers would recognize. And they may be from emotional benefits, if you were buying like that Starbucks experience, as a coffee, through to economic benefits if you are selling hardware or infrastructure to a large enterprise.
So, George, let's apply this to Endo's case. Given that pharmaceuticals industry is a mature and very crowded business, how did you find a breakthrough proposition?
Well, the two executives who bought Endo from DuPont, Marianne McDonald and Carol Ammon, knew that there were many areas in the pain market that were not being adequately addressed. It was a very large market, lots of dollars in it, but it was all being dealt with in one way. So what they wanted to do was refine our approach to the pain market and really redefine the way physicians thought about pain. We wanted to produce products that were more tailored at specific individuals, smaller women, so on, people who were less tolerant of certain ingredients. We also wanted to try to treat some areas that were traditionally untreated, such as the pain left over from shingles and other areas like that. So with all that put together, we really wanted to go after just this whole new way to approach pain, and it's been very successful.
David, back to your seven essentials. Number two, you have exploit a high-growth market segment. Now, that sounds reasonable enough, but isn't it true that you often don't know high-growth market segments until it's after it's too late to enter?
No, you know, a characteristic of a high-growth market segment has two parts, high-growth market and segment. It turns out that the highest growth markets in America were multi-hundred billion-dollar-a-year industries, like pharmaceuticals, like regional banks, insurance, and specialty retail stores, believe it or not. And then within those multi-hundred billion-dollar-a-year markets, find a billion-dollar subsegment and redefine it or, you know, reshape it or recreate it. So, for example, in retail, it's a multi-hundred billion-dollar-a-year market, and retailers target subsegments, be it for teenagers or lifestyle destinations. For example, Williams-Sonoma, one segment of it is redefining your kitchen experience. So key lesson here is think about targeting large industries that can create multi-billion-dollar companies and target a sliver of it, and you'll be surprised how large your market is.
George, your market already existed, of course. How have you been able to keep ahead of its overall growth?
We knew it was going to be growing as the baby boomers aged, so that was part of why it was such an attractive market to get into in the first place. It was already large and still growing. Once again, we knew that there were areas of pain that were not being addressed, and these areas were frequently with aging people. So that was the focus 10 years ago, and just go after those areas of pain. And as the population naturally aged, the market would grow right underneath us, and we'd be there ready to serve it.
All right, David, essential number three, marquee customers shape the revenue powerhouse. Now, what exactly does that mean?
Well, if you're going to become a revenue powerhouse, i.e., you're really going to achieve exponential growth, your marquee customers are your brand name customers, who not only buy a lot from you, so they are the source of compounding or exponential revenue growth per customer. They're the rising tide that lifts all boats, as you know that expression. But they're also the brand name customers that help you define the benefits so that you can share the news with other customers. And in addition, they're your sales force extraordinaire. They just don't act like a passive reference account. They spread the word. You know, it's beyond word of mouth advertising. They're so proactive and passionate about your company. They want to go out and not only spread the word, but sell for you. And the net impact is they shorten your sales cycle by half and cut your cost of sales and marketing by two-thirds. So marquee customers are one of your key leverage points if you're going to achieve revenue growth and not having to overinvest in order to achieve it.
And certainly in some of the companies you cite in your book, like Google and Starbucks, we've seen that effect at work. George, is there an example of a marquee customer that's helped Endo to sustain its growth?
It's a little bit different in pharmaceuticals in that our actual buying customers, there are only a handful of them. They're the big drug wholesalers. And so the customer from a pharmaceutical point of view are the physicians who write the prescriptions. There are lots of them, of course, but we have to find the thought leaders, the ones who are influential in their area or their field of medicine, and target them and let them know the benefits that Endo's products can bring to their patients. That was a real challenge for our sales force, but once you find those influential prescribers, they do talk to other physicians, and it helps sell your product very, very well. Nowadays, we're more into managed care organizations, the big preferred provider organizations and so on, the people who provide your drug benefits with your health insurance. We have to convince them now that managing pain is good for their business, and we're making a lot of inroads in many of those customers also.
David, your essential number four, leverage big brother alliances. It sure sounds like a great idea to get to a certain level, but isn't it true that companies sometimes have to break those alliances in order to vault to the next level of growth?
They do. The key ingredient is to start with one when you're small. So to break into new markets, you need to leverage up alliances because they're the large companies that will give you great access to marquee customers, markets, marketing intelligence. And big companies need to deal with little companies often to fill holes in their portfolio. Or in the case of small companies, they like to outsource to large companies to give them credibility and also capacity to grow and without having to overinvest in infrastructure. It is a very unique essential that the companies that achieved exponential growth tended to leverage more often than not.
So, George, was there a big brother for Endo?
Well, in a certain sense, we had several big brothers. We needed to rely on large partners to help us run our business, not as much as marquee customers, but we were small. We knew we had to run as a more or less virtual company. We didn't do our own manufacturing. We didn't do our own distribution. So we had to find partners for all of those areas, and really seemed to be in our best interest at the time to go with the big boys like UPS for distribution, IBM for hardware, SAP for our software. We needed to partner with these companies just to get our business done.
David, on to number five, become the master of exponential returns. Now, what is mastery of a factor like that?
Well, you know, exponential returns parallels exponential revenue growth, and in order to sustain compounding revenue growth, which is exponential in nature, you need to achieve exponential returns, and that means compounding earnings, which can be expressed in traditionally net income or earnings before income taxes, depreciation. But that generate those earnings and that bottom line performance translates to compounding exponential cash flow. And it's that cash flow with earnings that drives compounding market value and appreciation, which generates shareholder returns. So companies, the very best teams, were really effective at not only top line growth, but generating profit from that top line growth. And when you get compounding returns combined with compounding top line growth, you truly do generate a very unique dynamic that generates huge returns to the shareholder. Very few companies actually achieve that. And it truly is a big insight and a big lesson from the most successful companies that grew to a billion.
George, a big factor in managing growth, of course, is managing IT infrastructure. How have you scaled your processes and supporting infrastructure to manage the company's growth?
We knew from the very beginning, of course, that we had to have a good IT infrastructure if we were going to even do business at all because of the fact that we were so virtual. We had to have all these partners talking to each other. We couldn't staff up to do it manually, and it just made sense to do it electronically with systems. So we picked products that we knew we could support with minimal manpower and that could scale as large as we needed to go. So we picked a Microsoft platform on Intel hardware. We picked SAP eventually for our total integration system. We do everything through there, basically. We knew that we just simply had to be that way or we would not succeed.
George, maybe you can follow up on that. About your selection of SAP and AnswerThink, I believe you also use, how did you choose them as your technology partners?
When we split from DuPont, we were given a certain amount of time that we were allowed to use DuPont systems before we had to go off and create our own or buy our own. And we knew there were only two IT people, so it was absolutely ridiculous to think that we could write our own. We wanted to have a system with more functionality than the one we were using with DuPont. So we looked out there to see what was available, and at the time we looked at Bonn, PeopleSoft, and SAP, and the first two, Bonn and PeopleSoft, we really didn't seriously consider because we were way too small and their prices were way too high. SAP was local. They were dealing with small to mid-sized businesses through AnswerThink, and they took us seriously, and they were willing to give us the licensing fees that we could afford. And plus, we knew that it was an industry standard. No matter how big we grew, no matter what we wanted to do with the business, we knew SAP, even at the time, 10 years ago, SAP could handle it. We really didn't spend a lot of time analyzing things. We just knew we had to go with somebody big again, like our big brothers. We had to pick somebody big who could expand no matter where we went and how big we grew.
David, looking at your essential number 6, management, inside-outside leadership. I think we all know that outside perspectives do help a company manage better, but we've also seen cases where outsiders have been the wrong solution for a company. What have you seen? How do successful companies avoid those kinds of mistakes?
You know, I found that no one leader did it all. They were really led by a dynamic duo. They were, one was outside-facing, one was inside-facing, and they both complemented each other. In history, Hewlett and Packard, Sears and Roebuck, you know, in movies, Batman and Robin, to be illustrative. The pair offset each other's weaknesses. They complemented each other. They could start a sentence and finish. The other could finish a sentence. They had a common passion for the business. They were willing to switch roles. They had a high trust in one another. They were truly problem solvers as a team versus as individuals. And they often spoke with one voice that balanced the head and the heart between the emotion of the business and the facts on what the business really needed to do. They focused on the best for the employees, the community, the customers, and for the business. It wasn't about themselves.
George, one factor, certainly you talk about outside expertise, one factor that's very hard to manage is regulation. And you live in a highly regulated environment in the pharmaceutical industry. How have you ensured that you have the systems in place to maintain compliance?
Coming from the pharmaceutical industry in DuPont, all of us knew very well the regulatory pressure we were under. So it was sort of second nature to design compliance into our products, at least from FDA and the DEA point of view. And that's the other reason that we picked major products, because you know that auditors are familiar with SAP. They're familiar with the Windows operating system. If we're not using anything out of the ordinary, if we're audited, it's a lot easier to show the regulators that we know what we're doing because they're familiar with the products. It's difficult to some extent dealing with that, but not as difficult as it's been recently now with Sarbanes-Oxley. That's when it got a whole lot more difficult because it was new. We didn't know really what we were doing. That's another place where SAP really helped us out, because at the time there was a third-party tool called Versa Compliance Calibrator, I believe, which is now part of SAP. And it really helped us get our act together with segregation of duties and show our financial auditors looking at us from a Sarbanes-Oxley point of view that we were as well controlled in that area as we were in our other regulatory environments.
David, on to your final essential, board comprised of essentials experts. Now, what do you mean by essentials in this case, and are there any guidelines you can offer on how to find these people?
You know, essentials experts balance your investors and your management team members. They represent customers, alliance partners, and in a very unique role, CEO who's been to a billion is Howard Schultz from Starbucks, was on the board of eBay. You're looking for in this particular role, a CEO who's achieved exponential growth ahead of where you are. So if you're a $20 million company, you might look for a CEO who's run up to $100 million. Or $200 million, and when you get close to that point, you might change out board members to a CEO who's been to a billion. They could be not your direct customers, but CIOs from other industries or retired executives who've run large companies who've been customers and where you want to target. Oftentimes, alliance partners will sit on your board, as Motorola Ventures, for example. When they do an alliance that requires a venture investment, they might sit on the board when I've interviewed them. And then, of course, a community member for the greater good and recruiting talent could be a local professor from the local university, or somebody from the engineering community.
George, speaking to Endo's case, how has the board structure helped to propel the company forward?
In the beginning, the board was predominantly our investment bankers and their choices. And then the focus was on cash flow. And so almost everything we did was aimed at efficiency. The investment bankers have since reduced their role, and now we're gearing up to be a long-term pharmaceutical company. So now there's a lot more pharmaceutical expertise on the board from various aspects of the industry. So that's going to help propel us into the future now that we pretty much have the efficiency and the compliance end under control. Now we have to grow into the rest of the pharmaceutical world, and the new board will help us get there.
Well, thanks to our guest, David G. Thompson, author of Blueprint to a Billion, and George Streisner, Director of Enterprise Systems at Endo Pharmaceuticals, for their fascinating insights into the mechanics of high-growth companies. And thanks to you for joining us for this SAP Custom Podcast, Blueprint to a Billion, 7 Essentials to Achieve Exponential Growth. My name is Paul Gellert.